Catholic commentary. You're returning a service. 2122. Spiritual warfare. A1 clear, C, military. Stay ready so you don't have to get ready.
Jesus 911.
Soul Patrol Jesus 911, Wednesday show with Dr. Dan Schneider. He's back from special assignment. By the way, today's the feast day of St. Michael, St. Gabriel, St. Raphael. Pray for us. Dan, good. I'm glad you're back. We're going to talk about something that impacts every single one of us, which is called generational spirits. Every single email I receive always has something to do with somebody in my family, my father, my grandfather. So we'll pick up talking about generational spirits. But Dan, glad to have you back. Where you been?
Oh, it's great to be 10-8. I was out doing some apostolic work, doing some academic work, doing what I can to spread the gospel, bring as many people into the kingdom as we possibly can while we still got breath.
Yeah, exactly. We all got to pull the rope in the same direction. Hey, Dan, just want to put a
short... some of us just got to pull the rope. I mean, some people are... You know, right. I've heard Christianity described as like a football stadium with, you know, 75,000 people watching 24 guys slug it out, you know, or 22 guys, I'm sorry. But you know what I mean? So just a handful of guys out there fighting, and everybody else is just spectating. We need to get more guys engaged, you know, engaged in the spiritual combat. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I'm here, whether it's academic work or working with in the apostolate or anything that I do. It's to help bring as many souls to the truth as we possibly can.
Yeah, Dan, the Lord doesn't need any fans. He needs gladiators. And I think that's what you're saying. Yeah. I want to put a short little video. It's from Tucker Carlson. He's revealing a PowerPoint from the U.S. Army, and they're trying to, well, I would guess, use PSYOPs on their young soldiers to try to convince them to get the vaccines. So they use a PowerPoint slide, but... Tucker Carlson showed that this PowerPoint slide was borrowed from the seven tenets of Satanism. And so I want you to hear Tucker Carlson in his own words and we'll comment.
56 servicemen killed themselves. So military suicide is an actual crisis that the Pentagon might want to address. Lloyd Austin might want to look into that. But no, that would get the Democratic Party nothing. The point of mandatory vaccination is to identify the sincere Christians in the ranks, the free thinkers, the men with high testosterone levels, and anyone else who does not love Joe Biden and make them leave immediately. It's a takeover of the U.S. military. Here's how they're doing it. This show has just obtained a PowerPoint that the Army is using to justify mandatory vaccines to the troops. This is an actual slide from it on your screen. You will notice there the sympathetic portrayal of Satanism. How many children were sacrificed to Satan because of the vaccine, the slide reads, apparently sarcastically. Then the presentation proceeds to list the so-called tenets of Satanism, which are taken straight from the Temple of Satanism website. So here you have the United States Army doing PR for Satanism. The rest of the presentation is less shocking than that, but it's utterly shoddy and dishonest. For example, it falsely claims that only 3 people have died from taking the COVID vaccine. Reports collected by the Biden administration itself indicate that number is actually in the thousands. So we called the Army about this today, and they conceded the PowerPoint you just saw is absolutely real. Troops saw it, but it was somehow not approved by Army leadership. They did not explain how that works or what they're going to do about it. We do know the vaccine mandate is taking a terrible toll on the U.S. military and on this country's ability to defend itself at a very volatile time in the world. Already, 3 members of the CIA paramilitary teams that first entered Afghanistan after 9/11, remember them? They got there before the military. 3 members of that team have been suspended for not getting vaccinated. They're being told to await disciplinary proceedings. Meanwhile, an Army officer, Lieutenant Colonel Paul Douglas Haig, just announced that he's resigning from the military rather than take medicine that he does not want or need.
Well, Dan, this is very problematic. 2 things that Tucker Carlson said that jumped out at me. First of all, Satanism is going mainstream, and it seems to be infecting everything just like a cancer. He said that by showing this PowerPoint, borrowing from the 7 tenets of Satanism, he goes, this is a takeover of the U.S. Army. Here's my take. There's obviously a Satanist or Satanist amongst the ranks what they're trying to do is they're trying to get people of faith, patriots and conservatives, to say, you know what, I'm out. Okay, I'm gonna resign. I'm gonna retire. I'm out of here. And this way, the only people that are gonna remain in these four branches of the service are secular humanist pagans, woke soldiers, who the commander in chief could use against us somewhere down the line, just like Stalin and Hitler have used their military against civilians. That's, I'm talking big picture. What do you say?
Yeah, I picked up on the seven tenets of Satan, which I found quite interesting. Some major bucking for promotion, no doubt, put this up because along the chain of command, word got out that it's safe to mock Christians. And maybe the soldiers are kicking back saying, look, we object. Maybe they don't voice it in a way that is palatable for the upper rank, the upper officers, but they voiced their concern with the connection with abortion, the vaccine, and their own conscientious objection. So what I found interesting, though, is the use of Satanism and the seven tenets, so-called, of this religion, so-called. Number three is quite interesting. It says, one's body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. I find that very interesting. Dr. Peter Kreeft, Boston College, great philosopher, says that he points out the hypocrisy and the diabolic inversion in his connection to the Eucharist, where Christ says, this is my body, right, which is be given up for you. The satanic inversion of that is, this is my body, subject to my own will. And so the battle cry or the phrase that accompanies modern Satanism is, do what thou wilt. You'll see Hollywood big shots wearing this T-shirt. Do what thou wilt. Whatever you will do, you can. And that's been their battle cry on abortion from the beginning. This is my body. This is my choice. I will do what I wilt, not what thy will be done. The words of Christ in the garden, surrendering his body to the Father. So you see a very subtle inversion, but I'm sure they got called out on number three by some patriotic soldiers and Christians in that group. But nonetheless, yeah, I find it quite disturbing how completely overt and in the open the diabolic has become. It's become almost chic among young people. Again, I've said this over and over again. One of the truest, if not the only true thing that our previous President Obama said was that the United States is no longer a Christian nation. But to be post-Christian is to be neo-pagan. Nature and supernature abhors a void. Where there's a void, man is created philosophically. We're called homo religioso. Man is a religious being. We're created for God, as St. Augustine wrote so beautifully. My heart is restless and it finds rest only in thee. He sought God in these fair forms and other things. That we were created for God. We were created for heaven. And so we long for that. But when we try to be post-Christian, we try to shake off the authority of the church and shake off Christianity, that void, that vacuum was being filled now by another form of religiosity. And it's a return to neo-paganism, yeah. Whether it's modern Satanism or neo-paganism or syncretistic Christianity, where you've got island herbs and spices and these other incantations and cultic stuff practiced with some of the saints. And these sorts of things. So we're seeing this in this really negative syncretism also in Christianity and Catholicism that needs to be addressed as well. But right. Very overt form here. I mean, this is blatantly and absolutely disgusting and abhorrent for anyone who's ever donned uniform.
By the way, Dan, the Army leadership, they confirmed to Tucker Carlson that the slides were real, but they say it wasn't approved by the Army leadership. So this was somebody, you know.
Some rogue guy that you know,
took it upon himself to do this.
Took it upon himself. Yeah. But obviously he's pretty bold about it. You got to give him kudos for not being afraid to evangelize in this anti-gospel that he believes in, and mock Christianity.
Yeah. And by the way, the federal government has stated that the First Amendment protects the rights of Satanists. Can you believe that? You got them in the military chaplains. I've been told you have some as chaplains in prisons. They're allowed to, based on the First Amendment, to practice a religion, and so we're seeing here again some of the satanic subversion just in what I would call the patriarchal occupations. Here's one more thing. I was talking to some friends of mine in the military, you being one of them, but they told me that Barack Obama started this whole military remake very quietly but very effectively by replacing a lot of the the officers that he could in his 8 years. And somebody said that on the internet that you could look up all the officer lists of resignations under Obama, firings, reassignments during the 8-year Obama time period. They say it's a 5-page document. And this is the way Obama started his plan to remake the military, and I would say to destroy America. And Joe Biden is continuing with this plan. Tucker Carlson says Joe Biden is purposely destroying the U.S. military with his COVID vaccine mandate. What say you, Dan?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of talk among my friends that were still in the military back in the Obama days. And there was a general consensus of a purge taking place among the general officers, purging them of those who didn't have the like ideology. So, you know, once as a soldier, we always know, and you as a cop, whenever you get the city council dictating what policemen can and can't do, it's a bad thing. And whenever you get politicians dictating what's allowed and not allowed in the military, you know, to this extent, it's very dangerous not to let the military do what the military does and start dictating from behind a desk these bizarre things. And particularly when you start to see a purging of not only general officers, but I think you're going to see something very similar in law enforcement as well. It's a very interesting phenomenon that's taking place today. And I think we just need to militate against it and continue again, not wring our hands and curse, but to pray. Pray for those in authority. Pray for our military. Pray for our government leaders. Yeah.
St. Michael, St. Gabriel, St. Raphael, pray for us. We'll continue talking about generational spirits. We'll be right back. Jess Romero with Dan Schneider.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888. 526-2151.
Soul Patrol, Jesus 911, two-man car. Dan, most people's problems that I talk to on the telephone or people that email me, when they're getting involved, when they're having been vexed or tormented by the diabolical, what we would call diabolical affliction, every single one of them will always talk about their father, their grandfather, something in their family line. He was a Mason, he was a drug addict, he was in the mafia, et cetera, et cetera. And this is what we want to continue talking about. We were talking about this last time with you, and we want to pick it up here. It's called generational spirits and generational curses as well. This is, as you showed in part one, this is extremely rooted in Scripture, in the Old Testament, in the New Testament. It's also verified by case management, by case studies. I want you to talk now about generational spirits, specifically in light of how it passes by way of the family.
Yeah, as we said, that we see back from Deuteronomy that in other places in the Old Testament, that to those who curse me, right, there will be curses to the third and the fourth generation. And so we see this playing out, practically speaking. Christ himself, when he had the Mark 9:21, the father brought his child to him, and they said that, you know, we've all heard in modern homilies that he had epilepsy, right? Which is just an anti-supernatural bent that coming from false presuppositions, reading into the Gospels. But nonetheless, Jesus asked him, how long has this been? And the answer was from his birth, or literally from early in his development. Once the child begins to gradually develop, he started to immediately notice. And so what the question is, what possibly could that child have been afflicted by that would be that noticeable that early, right? So we see the presence of this at least innately or in a veiled manner in this one particular encounter that Christ drives out the diabolic and said the disciples couldn't do it. Some versions say that Jesus said, you know, with prayer and fasting only can these come out. So that can come into the paternal or the maternal line. Usually it's going to be the more dominant one, you know, the more dominant sin that gets passed on. A malefus comes from a combination of two Latin words, facere, to do, malus is do evil. So somebody does something evil. It could be institutional evil, participation in witchcraft, or it could just be a very grave evil act, you know, sexual abuse, rape, incest, murder, that sort of thing, abortion. Things can enter into the family line that way. Oftentimes the demon also can hide and can hide himself for a while, trying to create diversions, et cetera. So it's when people come to us for help, it's a great grace that they've reached a point where they want to deal with whatever's been going on in their own personal lives, how they've participated in evil. Ultimately, again, it's not automatic where if you have this in your generational line, then, you know, it's deterministic and you have no choice. That's not true at all. Individual souls are responsible for their own behavior. So if someone commits a mortal sin, you now make yourself vulnerable. You're not in a state of grace. You're now vulnerable to the familiar, any kind of familiar curses. We call them generational curses, but familial. Yeah.
Let me jump in and just put some flesh into what you just said. I won't get in a lot of detail. My father was an alcoholic up until about the age of 40, till he had a conversion in a Curcio retreat, and his life was changed. He never picked up alcohol after that again. But up until about 40, he was a drinker. There's four boys and one girl in the family. None of us were affected by my father's alcoholism, except one brother. One brother became an alcoholic, and he was the brother that lived in a state of mortal sin. So the other ones that were, the rest of us that were trying to pursue a life of virtue and the sacraments, we weren't affected by my father's alcoholism, except for one brother that was affected for many years, and he's the one that lived kind of a more wild life. So what you're saying, I saw that within my own family. My father's alcoholism did not affect anybody else but one brother.
Right. You just have a tendency. You know, you've got a vulnerability due to some grave act, violation of the first commandment, violations of the fifth commandment, other things, because of some grave act, and we don't even know, could have been generations before us, but we're vulnerable to those things, and those vulnerabilities present themselves, particularly when we step away from our shield. Our protection are the sacraments. We have a shield around us with the sacraments, but we still have a vulnerability. You know, I was watching some fights this weekend, and there was a beautiful fight. I wonder, this is a sidebar, not a beautiful fight, but something I saw was incredible. There was a fighter from Liverpool, England, who was jumping up the light heavy, and he was fighting a former Olympian from the Dominican Republic. The fighter's name was Smith from England. He caught him with just a typical straight or an overhand right. He knocked him out, but on the knockout, the guy went into a seizure, right? He goes into a seizure, and they were very respectful. And then this fighter, this really tough guy from Liverpool, he goes into the corner, and the camera doesn't want to show what's happening to this guy. And I think he's okay, thanks be to God. But they showed the other fighter, and nowhere else to put the camera. And this guy, Callum Smith was his name, he kneels down, makes a sign of the cross, and stays there for about a minute praying for the other fighter. It's a beautiful testimony to the sportsmanship of boxing. I was very touched by that. My point is this. My wife sees this fighter and she says, look, he's got big pointed eyebrows. I mean, bones over his eyebrows like you. I bet he cuts easily like you cut. Right. And that's just his nature, my nature. One of the reasons, besides the obvious, that I'm not the heavyweight champ of the world is that I've got this pointed brow and it cuts very easily. It's just part of my nature. So we have these same tendencies in the supernatural realm or preternatural realm passed on through families. You have to be very, very careful of. I mentioned that fighter as a sidebar, but these things can pass down to the generations. We have to just be aware of that. Again, we've talked about it before, how to get rid of it, that sort of thing. But how do they pass down? It's usually through someone in authority who abuses their authority in some way. The authority structure, remember, is given for twofold purpose: to provide and to protect. If the father And in most cases, it could be either. But let's say the father's head of household, if he's addicted to pornography, his authority is compromised. He's no longer providing protection, and he's allowing things into his home and his children, his wife and children. His marriage is vulnerable, and his wife and children are vulnerable because he's abdicated and he's lowered his shield to protect his family.
But that also apply to the mother. If the father's an on-fire Catholic and the mother's an unreconstructed pagan, she can also pass, you know, her mortal sins and her bad behavior can also have an effect on the children as well.
Absolutely. Let's say you have two parents and they both are a wreck. It's not, we don't know what causes it, what attaches, how it gets down, you know, it'd be pure speculation, but usually whichever of the two parents or couples or whatever commit the graver act, that seems to be what would be the more dominant familial sin that would be afflicting the family line.
Got it. Talk a little bit about demons of impurity how these demons drive behavior.
Yeah, oftentimes, you know, you're looking, it's like that video game. Remember back in the day when they used to have video games in the mall and you could actually go in and touch stuff that other people could touch before they closed the malls down? They had a game called Whack-A-Mole, and you could whack, the mole would pop up and you'd hit it with the hammer, and then another one would pop up. So sometimes you're whacking on this spirit over here, but it's actually something completely different. So you could be dealing with a spirit of impurity, for example, but there's something behind it that's driving it. Fear could be driving it. Obsessive compulsive behaviors could be driven by another fear or something else from, you don't even see where it's coming from. This is why it's important to really pray and pray to Our Lady of Sorrows for discernment of spirits to help you identify what's really at work. So one spirit can be manifesting in the family line, but that's not really what's the root cause behind it.
I like what you're always talking about, that precision is everything in spiritual warfare. Unpack that a little bit. What do you mean by that for somebody who's new listening to the show?
Yeah, you have to understand that, remember, the three point check down. The demon is not going to yield because of your emotions, because of the intelligence of your prayer. It's a threefold check down. Number one, does this person have requisite authority? Number two, what is the state of merit of their soul? Merit in their relation vis-a-vis the object that they're praying for, whether the object meaning person, place, thing. What is the relation by natural law and divine law, divine positive law, towards the person or object? And finally, what exactly, precisely are they asking? So precision in warfare is very, very, very important. You can drop, you could drop all sorts of bombs, but if the enemy is hiding, you have to get smart bombs to be precise in where you're hitting it. So same thing in spiritual warfare. So you have to be specific in what you're asking, and not just blank. You can blanket it I'm not saying you shouldn't pray, but over time, learn to be more specific. You know, everywhere you and I go, we often have, not often, always, I'm sure you would confirm this. Parents come up and say, "I have a child that's left the faith. How do we deal with that? How do we pray for this?" So, being precise in your prayers, not just advising God, fix my child so I don't have the shame of it, because I have the outward appearance of being an upstanding Catholic, or I don't have the shame of a failure or whatever. But pray, learning how to pray for them. You know, it's really kind of a two-step process. This is, again, a little off topic, but you have a child that's afflicted or struggling, you know, asking, depending on your relation to the child, your connection with the child, if it's a young child, under your authority completely, doing imprecatory prayers in the name of Jesus Christ, I bind any demon afflicting this child, present to him, you know, or her, known to my guardian angel, his guardian angel, Saint Michael, the archangels, the Blessed Virgin Mary, etc. And not just, Lord, fix him. Lord, change my heart towards him. Lord, grant him the grace to assent to the truths of the Roman Catholic faith. Move his desire from marijuana to make him hunger and thirst instead for you in the Holy Eucharist. Draw him to your Sacred Heart, your Eucharistic presence. Make him hunger and thirst for you. So learning how to be more specific in your prayer, if you find specifically, if you can unearth whatever that spirit is, a spirit of fear, well, what? How do you overcome fear? Fortitude. Start praying for the gift of fortitude, an outpouring, a new resurgence. Virtue and vice are both repeated acts. So the more you repeat them, the more they grow. So the act, making active, growing in virtue by repeated acts. Yeah.
What do you mean? We'll pick it up on the next segment. What do you mean by generational spirits also on a hierarchy? We don't know what baggage they're carrying. If you can unpack that. Jesus 911, two-man car talking about generational spirits. Big topic. Stick around.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, Soul Patrol, two-man car. We're talking about generational spirits. Breaking news here. United Airlines set to terminate 593 workers for refusing COVID-19 vaccine. So the COVID-19 vaccine cult, this religion, is on the march again. This is the entire specter of communism that's hovering over our world, just like an ugly black cloud. But Dad, let's go back to, what do you mean by generational spirits also on a hierarchy? Does that mean that again, there's lower demons, superior demons within generational spirits? Is that what you're trying to talk about? And
right.
we don't know what baggage they're carrying. Obviously, we don't know. We have to find out through Our Lady of Sorrows, the nine day novena, correct?
Right. But these things work on a hierarchy. It's a disordered, it's a fallen hierarchy, but it's nonetheless, they retain the hierarchy. When an angel falls, he retains his position in his own, the diabolic hierarchy, satanic hierarchy. So you could be dealing, the entry point could be one thing, but there could be multiple others that come with it. You know, for example, when Jesus says to the Gerasene demoniac, "What is your name?" He says, "My name is Legion." We hear that all the time because there are many of us. So there's never just one. You'll have your principal possessing, for example, in the case of a person, your principal possessing person, demon, and then you'll have protector class demons, and then you'll have other sorts of array of different ones that were designed to fight off any resistance, to suppress religiosity, to draw the soul into disbelief, to draw the soul into carnal sins, that sort of thing. So one by one, you have to start knocking these things back, both the priest exorcists, but largely through the life of conversion. So overcoming these things, growing in holiness, ultimate liberation means freedom from the evil one, so that freedom for union with God, reconciliation with God the Father through Jesus Christ. And that only comes through growth and holiness. And so you might have the entry point in a familial line that you don't know what it could be. It could be an abandonment, it could be sexual abuse, incest, etc. And then other spirits could come in on the tail of it, and that's what you're kind of dealing with on the surface, but something deeper could be at work.
Dan, so, something interesting about people that get diabolically afflicted, they hear about, okay, I got to return to a life of holiness and virtue, some type of a prayer protocol, and they start, and they're doing it for days, maybe a couple of weeks, and they get frustrated. They're saying, man, I mean, I started living in a state of grace. I went back to confession. I'm starting to try to have a constant life of prayer. I've let go of some of these mortal sins. I've walked, and I'm still being harassed. To me, I like the way you say it's like when you leave a gang. Can you develop that so people understand? It's not like, okay, I'm leaving the gang, the Mexican mafia, and they're going to leave you alone. You're going to walk the streets of East L.A., and you're going to be completely impervious to their harassment and their attacks. Explain, the analogy of when you're becoming liberated, you return to a life of faith and virtue, and you're still being harassed. Why is that they're still being harassed?
Yeah, there's a saying, you know, the gang mentality much, much deeper than I do. But, you know, the saying blood in, blood out, you know, you're going to shed your blood to get into the gang, and you're going to shed your blood if you want to get out of the gang. So they're going to the diabolic works. And if you can understand the way gang behavior is, you'll be able to understand how the diabolic hierarchy works. So when once you enter into the gang, so-called, in this case, you commit some act, you do something. It could be something formal, it could be some ritualistic practice that you do, knowingly, unknowingly, but you do it. And you're now having some sort of initiation through your behavior, at some level, knowledge, et cetera. You know, I've heard people say, well, I dabbled in the occult. Okay. It's like a woman saying, I dabbled in pregnancy. I was only kind of pregnant. You know, there's no dabbling in the occult. It either is or it isn't. It's very objective. The demon never works in the subjective. He only works in the objective. So in this case, that the once a person is wants to make the move outward, I've had people say, well, many times I've cases say, well, I what happened? I don't know. I went to an axe retreat or a crucio. And then I had this amazing retreat, and everything just got really bad after that. Well, he's trying to leave. The demon recognizes metanoia, a conversion experience, and he's going to try to leave the lifestyle that he's been living, where he was under the dominion of the evil one, and he starts moving towards Christ. And the enemy says, I don't think so. Any more than if you're in the MS-13 gang and you say, yeah, I don't know, I think I'm going to become an accountant. And so I'm just not going to go to meetings anymore. You just don't get out that easily. You know, you get jumped out, you run the gauntlet to get out there's if they let you out at all, and you will constantly for the rest of your life have a vulnerability with them and a connection and soul ties with them. It's something that's going to linger in your life as well, but you're not just going to leave because you changed your mind. They're not going to let you out of the gang, and the demon anymore isn't going to let you out. It's just going to take some rough work and some grunt work and some smash mouth Catholicism to get out.
Yeah, it's like a gang. They're going to take their pound of flesh from you before you leave. And same with the demon. You're not going to get out unscathed because, again, you were in a relationship with the demon, and now you're entering back into a relationship with God. They're going to show some extreme jealousy. So, yeah, of course, this is part of the purification anyway, Dan. Let's go back to the generational spirits. What is... When you talk about, well, we can also see generational spirits in political parties. And we can also see generational spirits in what I would call social structures of sin, like Planned Parenthood, Playboy, Penthouse, Hustler. The Catechism calls those social structures of sin. I want to ask you about authority, okay? Tell us a little bit about authority, that most of it starts with the Father. And I want to talk about and also talk about authority by the biological lineage.
Yeah, authority is a structure established. This is it's a structure established by God. Natural law authority is a structure established by God that God has placed into the minds that we might grasp by the light of reason that a person has the right to command us to do certain things. So intellectually, I can see, I can grasp that this person has the right to command, or I have a right to command. So the demons know this structure and must comply to it. They must comply to this structure. So if someone has the right to command over an object by natural law, or a place, or a person, then the demon will have to comply to that. But at the same time, when somebody in authority abdicates it, remember, authority is the structure is in place to provide materially and spiritually, and to protect materially and spiritually. So when the person who has been given that authority abdicates, it now creates a vulnerability to those under those people, places, objects under their authority.
And one of the big ones is pornography. Obviously, just if you got the father that's cutting his teeth on pornography, it's gonna affect the boys especially. And once in the house, everybody's subject to, you know, to being contaminated to some degree or another, again, especially when the head of the household is complicit. Dan, talk a little bit about in the family, the use of the demon of X against each other, demon of fear or inability of suffering, leads to quarreling. What do you mean by that?
So you can have one spirit that is more operant, but he's pushing and creating other, you know, look, go back to the gang structure. You have the one that's the capo, that he's the one that's in charge of all the operations. But then you've got the guys going out and the ones that are breaking into stores and doing their petty theft and the guys that are dealing that sort of thing. It's all fall under that structure. So what you're dealing with as a cop, you're dealing largely with the low level thugs that are out there peddling drugs on the street corners and breaking small petty crimes, but it all funnels up into the organization. Someone else behind the scenes is calling that shot and spending that money and redistributing that money according to whatever their own structure is. So the same thing, you could have a spirit of fear, or you could even go back. You could have a grave act of, say, incest that creates in. Now you have a spirit of fear enters in, or distrust or rejection of authority. Or you could have this spirit of fear now brings with it an inability to suffer or a recoil against suffering. And that could bring the lack of suffering instead of embracing the cross with fortitude and courage and developing virtues to overcome fear. You can have sins of rashness. You could have sins of intemperance, of impurity. It could, you know, you could reach for other things. So you might be dealing with a sin back here that began in a generation or two before you, but now you end up with what, you know, a spirit of infidelity, a spirit of lust, of unchastity, impurity. You could have a very common one we see is called an orphan spirit. So something grave happens in the family line through some grave act, and now you have this down the road, you start to see other things manifesting, like the orphan spirit, which is a rebellious, some of the marks of the orphan spirit: rebellion, isolation, disconnecting, recoiling or shrinking back, a powerlessness, comparing to others, impatience, seeking false comforts in the things of the world, a false self-image, a lack of inability to entrust yourself and see yourself as a child of God, the inability to see the loving paternity of God the Father. This all manifests itself because something happened in the paternal line, who knows when, and over time, through your own vulnerabilities, your own lack of a state of grace, your own personal sin, you now participate in your vulnerability as manifests itself in a different way. Again, whack-a-mole is probably the most banal but simplest way to put it. You're whacking over here, but it's actually over here.
Yeah, that's the perfect way of understanding it. Why does God allow this, Dan, to this type of suffering for his children when they're trying to liberate?
Several reasons. St. Alphonsus Liguori says that, doctor of the church, he says that God allows affliction sometimes to chastise us for the evil we're doing. We're not, if we won't voluntarily.
Hold that thought, okay. Dan. Hold it. Good stuff. Jesus 911, Dan Snyder, Jess Romero talking about generational spirits. This is a macro topic. This is almost everything in spiritual warfare. The way things come down from the family line. We'll be right back. Stick around.
Now, back to Jesus 911. If this call is not an emergency, dial 888-526-2151.
Jesus 911, Lord, come to our assistance. Lord, make haste to help us. Happy feast day of St. Michael, St. Raphael, St. Gabriel. Pray for us. We're talking about generational spirits, which is a macro topic. This is almost everything when it comes to spiritual warfare. We got Dr. Dan Snyder, who's an expert in these areas. So, Dan, my question is, why does God allow his children to suffer like this? And what say you?
Yeah, if you remember a couple of scripture verses, St. Paul says, Colossians 1:24, I make up what is lacking in the suffering of the body of Christ on behalf of his body, the church. So our suffering, we know as Catholics, that our suffering can have meritorious value. If we don't link our suffering, this is the deep waters of Catholic spirituality, the linking of suffering, the offering of suffering. You know, in Philippians 2, I think it's 2:9 or 2:19, not only has it been appointed to you to believe in him, but to suffer for him. So we suffer for suffering has salvific value. God's will for us everywhere and always is our salvation. Everything that we endure is for our salvation. Our salvation, those of the church, specifically those in our own family construct. So on one level, let's say four reasons. One, God allows us to chastise somebody for the evil that they're doing. God allows suffering to wake up. St. Paul in Corinthians says, drive the evil one from your midst, so that he may be afflicted, and in his affliction he might return to the way of truth. And oftentimes if we don't voluntarily suffer, God lets us to suffer to remedy that and to provide atonement for past sins. Number two, through struggling, we grow in virtue. Right. And in growing in virtue, we conquer the enemy. We conquer the evil one. Number three, it helps fashion the whole family. When I'm doing an intake, I'm looking at the person, but I'm listening for which soul in the family is most in danger. Normally, it's not the person that comes to us. The person that comes to us is having this conversion experience. They want out. But now God is trying to pour grace, not into the individual, but this individual becomes Christ to the family. And because this person is strong, Christ sees him and says, no, this one is going to be Christ to the family construct. We'll suffer for the family to bring the souls most in danger to provide grace through their suffering to a soul most in danger, and thus to reorient and refashion the whole family, right? And finally, God allows our suffering to humiliate and crush the demon. It's hard for us to understand that they are the instrument of our salvation. We are the instrument of their torment, their destruction. And so we see through our growth in virtue, through our offering of suffering, that God allows that so that more grace will pour out into the world, specifically into the family construct. So when people can learn how to offer their suffering up for the church, for their local bishop, for their pastor, specifically for their spouse, their children, linking their suffering up to the struggles of their loved ones, helps to bring more grace into the familial construct, which is where God is ultimately operating and working in to get our families to break whatever vices that are afflicting us and to bring our families into full communion with God and the church.
Dan, is there generational spirits in nations and in races? For example, I mean, we live in the United States. What would you say about the U.S.?
Yeah. Father Ripper has commented on this, that every nation, races, other things have generational spirits that afflict them. He has mentioned the United States has the temptation and demons of greed and fraud, and the openness that creates is an unfettered capitalism, which has its own, it's kind of a counterpart to unfettered communism. And so this, if there isn't some regulation, particularly by the common good, right? If there's not an infusion of the common good into capitalism, and I'm a capitalist, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, I'm talking about unregulated or what we would call crony capitalism.
That's right.
I'm not talking about the ability of people to go open up a coffee shop or a restaurant. I'm talking about crony capitalism. If there is no regulation, you're getting what you have now. You have large corporations dominating, even to the point we have today. We have large tech media is dominating. Think about it. President of the United States, Donald Trump, is locked out of Twitter, but the leader of the Taliban is able to continue to tweet his messages and to communicate with his followers in Afghanistan. It's irrational that kind of power that they have, that they yield that kind of power because it's been completely unregulated. So it can afflict nations. It can afflict cultures. It can afflict religious houses. It can, can afflict all sorts of things, each in their own vulnerabilities and ways.
Dan, the Mormons have this approach where they have retroactive baptisms. I guess that's their way of trying to combat these generational spirits, trying to make up for what happened in times past. They're trying to repair things. What would be wrong with these retroactive baptisms? Why are these so patently wrong? This cannot help.
They're wrong on many levels. Human freedom, number one. But one of the reasons that the Mormons do that is to populate in their religious structure, the phrase is, what God the Father now is, What you are now, God the Father once was, what God the Father now is, you one day shall be. Meaning, you will, as we know God the Father, you're going to be God the Father someday. And everyone that you baptize and bring into the Church of the Latter-day Saints now become in your planet, in your cosmos, you're God the Father to them. So you can baptize those souls, and even of the dead, and they now populate and worship you as God the Father. So that approach sometimes filters in a little bit obliquely into some Catholic methodologies that say we have to heal the family tree. You really can't heal the tree in as much as you can heal family members, right? How do we heal the family tree? What's the Catholic way? You pray for the dead. You honor the dead. You have masses said for the dead, right? And you militate against any vice that may have come in to the family line by developing virtue and growing in holiness and becoming a saint. Because God ultimately says that to those who love him, the blessing goes to the thousandth generation. So when people come into the church because they want to be liberated from the evil, God is proposing to them in a way to suffer and to allow a thousand generations of blessings of purifying the family line through their suffering. And they have to see it that way, but it's not as simplistic as the approach of, well, let's just, you know, purify the family tree, you know, through rebaptizing or whatever. It's not a quick fix. It's not a one and out thing. Just, you know,
Dan, We can find out. Father Ripperger says that, and Kyle Clement, that by praying a novena to Our Lady of Dolorosa, Our Lady of Sorrows, for 9 days, she will reveal to us the generational spirit in our family. So that's the Catholic approach of finding out what we're being afflicted with. Talk a little bit about, once we know what the generational sin is, how do we invert it? How do we, we fight against it once we know, okay, it's all right, we've got the generational sin of alcoholism in my family. What do you do from there?
Yeah, you know, you have to look at it both naturally and spiritually. On a natural level, you have to combat it with virtue. If you have the spirit of alcoholism or the spirit of addiction, combating it with through the virtue of temperance. You know, if you have the spirit of anger working, developing constancy. If you have a spirit of fear, working on fortitude, developing the virtues, combating, figuring out through where is the vice, where is the defect that you're vulnerable to, and then how to counteract it. You know, the words of Jesus himself, this only comes out of prayer and fasting. So sometimes you're going to have to go a little deeper in your Catholic faith, pray, fast, start praying the Angelus, 6, 12, and 6, start giving up meat on Fridays. Most Catholics still eat meat on Fridays, making that little sacrifice as an offering. Going back to Our Lady of Sorrows, the importance of Our Lady of Sorrows in the spiritual warfare is there's a reason Father Ripperger chose Our Lady of Sorrows, the name for his organization, hopefully soon to be religious order. At the Prophecy of Simeon, you yourself, it says, this child will be the rise and fall of many. You yourself, a sword will pierce, and the hearts of many will be revealed. So there's a union of the two hearts of Jesus and Mary, fulfilled, consummated at the cross, where the spiritual writers and some of the saints have written this. This is where her heart was pierced spiritually when Christ's heart was pierced with the sword, and the union of these two hearts for the revelation of souls. And so Our Lady will do that in some mysterious way. Just pray to her and she'll help you walk. She'll walk you through like a good mother to help you unearth so you can start militating more directly against it. But you're not going to militate it by rebaptizing your grandparents. You're going to militate against it by saying, having masses said for the dead, praying prayers of atonement and reparation, doing acts of penance for your family line, and allowing God to continue to heal, realizing it's not one and done. You can't just go one day and clock out and say, yeah, I think I'm going to leave, and now that I've joined Christianity or embraced my faith, had my conversion experience, came back to the church, everything's going to be just you know, sweet and butterfly kisses and flowers blooming when I skip down the pathway to Mass. you just entered into the realm, you entered into the arena of spiritual battle, because now is when the fight begins. This is why I say we need smash mouth Catholicism. It's just ground and pound Catholicism. Just grind it out. Get holy or die trying, as you like to say. So
that's
so
right.
working on developing the virtues to offset the vices. So on the spiritual side, watching the interior movements, you know, there's a principle of a nation principle of agere contra. Go against that which causes the agitation or the disturbance, because in that interior movement, there's a lot of grace there. You're looking at the patterns of behavior. So learning to see where the negative pushback is, and where you're finding interior resistance, because oftentimes that's where you need to go to unearth what the spiritual defect is that's causing the vulnerability both in your life and the life of your family.
Dan, real quick, what are the four types of ways that demons attack a human person? We got about a minute less.
Okay.
I know possession is the highest one.
Possession, obsession, oppression, and temptation. The ordinary is temptation. The extraordinary is oppression, obsession, and possession. The most ordinary that we're going to see is temptation, and then some low-level obsessions, what most people are dealing with.
Got it. That's a wrap. We're EOW, end of watch, 10-7, out of service. See you all today over at the Sacred Heart Chapel for the St. Michael, the Shield of St. Michael's gathering tonight.
Awesome, guys.
Oh, yeah.
I hope they have a great turnout tonight.
Yeah, me too. Up next, Gary Machuda. See you later. Signing out. God bless you.